Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today, WBGO's Daybreak host Gary Walker chats with guitarist Tom Rotella, who's out with a new album, Right Time Left.
Tommy Tedesco was from my hometown. I studied with the same teacher he studied with. When I came out here, I eventually met Tommy, and then he kind of took me under his wing and started taking me to sessions. So the first session I went to was at Warner Brothers, and it was for Lalo Schifrin. I think he was doing one of the Dirty Harry movies.
WBGO's John Kalish tells us why Yiddish Dixieland is growing.
The Kiselhof and Makinoveski corpus shows us a much broader engagement of these musicians with the contemporary social dance music of the places where they lived.
And our film critic Harlan Jacobson shares his 10 best list of movies from 2025. All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal.
I'm Gary Walker, and welcome to another session here at WBGO.org. Chat today with guitarist Tom Rotella, and I'm going to quote Tom's own words from his biography. And he says, "I remember it like it was yesterday. I'm 8 years old, and my buddy Rich and I are looking through a basement window of Mount Carmel Church in Niagara Falls, New York. There's a dance going on. I see this multi-headed monster with arms flailing and all this sound and energy, and people dancing. And it was the first time that I had seen a live band. And I said to myself, man, I got to be part of that." Enamored by his grandfather's guitar, he picked up one himself, took some lessons, and man, he hit the road and he never looked back. And the career of Tom Rotella has had his exceptional talent as part of groups including Frank Sinatra and Nora Jones, Dionne Warwick, the Beach Boys, Four Tops, Seth MacFarlane, Luciano Pavarotti, Herb Alpert, Tom Scott, and Cher, and so many others. He's done television work. He's done film work over the years. And like same time next year, The Gods Must Be Crazy, one of my favorite films of all time, an early 80s film called Rumblefish, with Matt Dillon and Diane Lane and Lawrence Fishburne and Nicolas Cage and Mickey Rourke and others. I mean, if you haven't seen that film, you got to check it out. As of late, Tom Rotella has focused on the Greasy and the Grits. You know, Newark's an organ town with the Key Club and Sparky J's, the Cadillac Club and Mr. West's Lounge. And we have long time had an affinity for the organ here at WBGO. And the organ guitar mashup has been part of the last couple of his recordings, the last one, Side Hustle, and now this one we're going to chat about today, Right Time Left. And it's my honor and pleasure to chat with guitarist Tom Rotella. Tom, how you doing, man?
I'm well, Gary. After that intro, man, you made me feel great.
So early on there in Niagara Falls, there was a club called the Ontario House where you used to hang out quite a bit. What was that like?
The Ontario House was a tiny jazz club. And we used to be, you know, when I was in high school, I wasn't old enough to get in, but we would play our dances. You know, I'd play at the dances, and then we'd go park in behind the Ontario House, and the window would be open, and I would hear this organ trio called the Milestones, with a guy named Dirk Commode, who eventually wound up playing with, I think, Santana.
Oh, okay.
But it was, it wasn't the first time I heard an organ trio, but it was one of the big influences on me. We used to sit back there and just listen the rest of the night till they were done. And I remember being enamored that they could do actual live fades. They didn't end everything. They would fade out. And that's actually become a big part of my live thing, because I really love when the band can get so quiet you can barely hear them, but they're still playing.
You know, those sense memories, man, are an integral part, and they're deeply indelled into who you are and what you are and what you do. And you bring them here to this brand new recording called Right Time Left. It's your latest. It's on the High Note record label, an all-star cast, including Will Blades on the organ, Charles Ruggiero on the drums. Lenny Castro stops by to do some percussion work. And listen to this front line, man. Ernie Watts on the tenor and trumpeter Jeremy Pelt, and also guest pianist Antonio Adolfo. We'll talk about his contributions a little bit later on, but some other special guests too. And also the voice of Tierney Sutton as an instrument. Right Time Left, man. How long did this take to in the planning stages? Because there's so much music on it.
20 years. This record, I mean, Mike kind of encouraged me to stretch out a little bit from the organ trio thing. And I was a little hesitant to do it, but, you know, we got there with it. And, you know, a lot of those people go, I go way, like Lenny Castro, we go back to the 70s. He played on all my early demos when I was trying to get a record deal back then. And we knocked around L.A., you know, when we were kids. And then, you know, Ernie, I knew from the studio days, and, you know, we played together. We had a band for a couple years. We played at the Baked Potato quite a bit and did that. And then Tierney, I met in the 90s, and I love her voice, and I've always been attracted to the voice because of the Donald Byrd record, Band and Voices. I mean, ever since, I mean, I grew up, I wore that record out when I was a kid. I mean, I just loved that record. And I used her, as a matter of fact, on one of my earlier albums, we did Cristo Redento from that. And she sang some really wonderful stuff on it. So I like using her voice. She has a kind of this thing that blends in well with the instruments.
Oh, does and, it ever, man.
Yeah. And she has a real knack for that. And she's done numerous records with me over the years. So that goes back a while.
On Lazy Afternoon, and also on an original that you do called Shimmer, that's just gorgeous, man. Gorgeous, but it jumps out there, out of the gate, with Ernie Watts just blowing, man. This is for Lou, and oh man, what a smoke! Who's Lou?
Lou is a dear friend of mine that passed away. We went to Berkeley together, and he was kind of like a friend that was like family to me. He passed away, God, about 6-7 years ago, but. He was the most joyous, he was a bass player, and he was the most joyous guy playing music. He just exuded joy when he played, and it was kind of a great loss for me. And he was from Philly, so that song kind of reminded me of the Philly organ, Pat Martino stuff.
All right.
And so I dedicated that to him.
Yeah, and it's full of joy, man, right from the get. It jumps out there, this is for Lou. And then How Sweet It Is reminds me of kind of like, you know, Charles Erlen more today than yesterday.
That's where I was going with that. Yeah. Right.
That's another burner, man. breaking in to the studio scene in Los Angeles, was that a tough thing for you? Or you, because man, you just jumped right in. I mean, your resume is unbelievable.
Well, it was kind of a bizarre thing. I mean, I came out here to play jazz, and I remember, Tommy Tedesco was from my hometown. I studied with the same teacher he studied with. So when I came out here, I eventually met Tommy, and then he kind of took me under his wing and started taking me to sessions. So the first session I went to was at Warner Brothers, and it was for Lalo Schifrin. I think he was doing one of the Dirty Harry movies.
Oh, a dear friend of mine, Lalo Schifrin.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, for years.
Yeah.
Man.
And this guy walks out with sunglasses and goes to the phone booth, and I see him in the phone booth. I said, "Is that Howard Roberts?" He goes, "Yeah." So he goes, "Hey, Howard, come here." So Howard comes over. So Tommy introduces me to Howard, and Howard says, "Kid, if you want to play jazz, get out of L.A." So that was my introduction to Howard. And, you know, Tommy took me on some sessions and kind of showed me the ropes. And then eventually I started getting some calls and kind of built up my own clients and stuff. And it took off pretty quick, strangely enough. I mean, I was very fortunate. I had a few early breaks, and I guess I did okay because I kept working. So,
yeah, you sure did. I just covered a little bit of your musical resume, man. It is sparkling. And we look forward to sharing Right Time Left, the new recording on High Note, from our guest Tom Rotella today. Been a pleasure, my man.
Same here, Gary. Thank you, man.
Klezmer is the instrumental music of Eastern European Jews, sometimes referred to as Yiddish Dixieland. The klezmer repertoire has grown by leaps and bounds in the last few years as a result of an archive in a Ukraine library. More than 1,000 klezmer tunes from the Kiselhof Makinovsky collection are now being taught, recorded, and performed. WBGO's John Kalish has the story.
We begin this story in Erfurt, Germany, about 150 miles southeast of Hanover. An 80-piece amateur orchestra there is playing a klezmer tune from the Kiselhof Makinovsky archive before an outdoor crowd of 3,000. The tune is titled Hannah's Skatchna. It was named in honor of Hannah Achner, a 33-year-old klezmer clarinetist who digitized some 600 tunes from the Kiselhof Makinovsky archive. Achner has a PhD in physics and a day job doing research on electron microscopy in Cambridge, England. She started digitizing tunes during the COVID lockdown.
Nobody had anything to do at the time. You couldn't go out to a jam session, play with people. In the evening, you couldn't practice at home because they're neighbors, so you can digitize tunes.
Achner is one of dozens of klezmer musicians involved in the Kiselhof Makinovsky Digital Manuscript Project, or KMDMP as it's known. The project has been working on close to 1,400 klezmer tunes from two sources. Some were collected in the seminal Anski ethnographic expeditions, documenting Eastern European Jewish communities during the early 1900s. The rest are melodies composed by a klezmer violinist who played at Jewish weddings. The KMDMP volunteers work from digital photos of hundreds of pages of sheet music, turning the tunes into PDF files and entering them into music notation software.
Most of the time, there's some creases in the page. There's some bits that are not that readable. You write it out as a nice music sheet so that it's easy for people to play. So there's music and then there will be notes saying why I made certain choices.
The digitized tunes are available on the web for anyone to download. Klezmer musicians involved in the KMDMP have been playing through the melodies together during Zoom sessions led by Christina Crowder, a New Haven accordion player who heads the Klezmer Institute, the umbrella group that started this digital humanities project. Crowder says this Klezmer treasure trove demonstrates that Jewish musicians in the early 20th century were influenced by music outside the Jewish community.
The Kiselhoff and Makinoveski corpus shows us a much broader engagement of these musicians with the contemporary social dance music of the places where they lived. And that includes folkloric music as well as social dance, such as mazurka and polka and quadrilles and waltzes.
Music from the KMDMP has been recorded and released by several klezmer bands in the last couple of years. One album, titled Of a World That Is No More, features an Italian duo that includes the classically trained clarinetist Angelo Baselli. Now 47, Baselli caught the klezmer bug close to 30 years ago.
I don't have a Jewish family, but instantly I fall in love with that music and I start to search recording. But at that time it was a little bit hard because there wasn't a klezmer movement in Italy. I start to play this music more seriously since 2015 when I've been in London at the Klezfest. This is my klezmer story.
Klezfest is just one of several klezmer and Yiddish culture festivals in Europe and North America where the Kiselhoff Makinoveski tunes have been spreading. One of the klezmer veterans who teaches in Europe is Susie Evans, a British clarinetist who's performed as a soloist with the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra. Evans went through hundreds of the tunes in the Kiselhoff Makinoveski collection.
Initially, the ones you know stand out. But then later, it was the ones we didn't know that stood out because they were the ones we would start to teach people and say, oh, we found this great new tune. If you're teaching klezmer music regularly, you're always looking for tunes that someone who's coming to the workshop and knows a lot of tunes won't know.
Evans divides her time between the UK and Germany because her accordion-playing partner, Sylvia Trenko, is based in Hanover. The duo has taught the Kiselhoff Makinoveski tunes at Yiddish Summer Weimar, one of the world's premier Yiddish culture events. Sylvia Trenko.
Wherever we go, we like to spread these melodies. We like to teach it to people, and it works. Because people do play these melodies they heard from us. In jam sessions, in different countries, people play them in London, people play them here in Germany. People in Australia are playing them too now because they were in our workshop. The tune starts to come back to life when you play it. That's really nice.
The Kiselhoff Makinoveski tunes are gaining traction here in the U.S. as well. The New York-based record label Borscht Beat, regarded as the leading distributor of klezmer music, recently released an album by a Bay Area klezmer trio called Voretsky Pass. The ensemble's violinist says culling melodies from the Kiselhoff Makinoveski archive was like digging through the ashes of a lost Jewish culture. But she added that having access to the trove was like winning the lottery. For the WBGO Journal, I'm John Kalish.
WBGO's film critic Harlan Jacobson says year 2025 has been a better year than 2024. In fact, it has been simply stellar. He's not confining himself to a 10 best list because there's no way more than 10 could be on anyone's list.
Joachim Trier's Sentimental Value, which started at Cannes and played both Toronto and the New York Film Festival, has the great young Dane-Norwegian director working again with his actress, Renate Ransve, the star of Trier's 2021 Oscar-winning The Worst Person in the World, and Stellan Skarsgård. Having made the shortlist for Best Foreign Film at the upcoming Oscars as Norway's entry, Sentimental Value is about the rift in a family between a legendary film director and his grown daughters, one of whom, Ransve, is a rising actress. About an old king of cinema seeking to engage his daughters to make a comeback film, Sentimental Value enters Bergman territory in its observation, its delicacy, and wistful recognition about family wounds in the family business of filmmaking that is meant to heal them. It flat out deserved the Palme d'Or at Cannes, where the jury gave it the runner-up prize instead, and garlanded Iranian director Jafar Panahi's It Was Just an Accident with the Palme. A good film, but not the best film, to be sure, to protect Panahi at home from the mullahs who've jailed him. There's no better film this year than Sentimental Value. There are others that, in their own way, I loved as much. Chloe Zhao's Hamnet, which won the Audience Award at the 50th Toronto Film Festival in September, drops us in on the 1580s courtship and marriage near Stratford-on-Avon between Will, a young Latin tutor and failed apprentice and son of a glove maker, and Agnes, held to be the latest in a line of forest witches, whom we recognize as simply a strong woman 400 years ahead of her time. It is almost not until the end of this two-hour film that anyone says Will's last name, Shakespeare, and we understand that Agnes is the interchangeable name of Anne Hathaway, his wife. This, too, is a story about the making of a play. We know it as Hamlet, set also in Denmark. We are so keen to go to it as one of Shakespeare's tragedies about kings and power that Zhao disarms and devastates us by realizing the backstory of it as a work of paralysis over the loss of Will and Agnes's son Hamnet. Paul Mescal is the playwright, playfully working out verses that will live forever in, say, Romeo and Juliet, for instance, but start as fodder for his three children putting on skits in the backyard. And Jesse Buckley, as his witchy wife who can read the tea leaves, give career-defining performances. Maggie O'Farrell, who co-wrote from her novel, handed the film off to Zhao, whose earlier films were about paralysis. You could draw a line in the 43-year-old Zhao's development from Writer in 2017 about rodeo riders paralyzed through Nomadland, the Oscar-winning film in the plague year 2020, with Frances McDormand as a woman in her 60s wandering American byways to Hamnet. She is now a front-rank generational storyteller whose topic is what paralyzes us, great and small, and what we do to restart. I'm also compelled to talk about Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another, which has swept all the critics' groups as best film of the year and looks like a lock on a number of Oscars. I confess, I didn't love it, but everybody else does, and here's why. It's a pure Hollywood pinball game with all the satirical markings of an indie-turned-major filmmaker bringing together a big cast of cartoonish American archetypes taken from Thomas Pynchon's 1990 novel Vineland, set in the middle of the Reagan years, which Pynchon thought was about as authoritarian corrupt as we'd ever get. Well, ha, Pynchon, wherever you are, Anderson has made an overbroad but fast-paced slapstick black comedy from your mad book about the white supremacist Christian nationalist takeover of government. It's mightily ticked off the Trump crime syndicate big time, who call it an ad for left-wing terrorism. It didn't help that it opened just after Charlie Kirk's assassination. Leonardo DiCaprio is Bob, a white bomb-making beta male house husband. How's that for a combination? Out to rescue his daughter, Willa, Chase Infinity, from the likes of Sean Penn as a bow-legged, pants-full crackpot rogue colonel named Lockjaw, with a sweet tooth for lavatory sex with Perfidia, DiCaprio's wife, a hot black revolutionary woman on the lam played by Teyana Taylor. Benicio del Toro wanders through as a barely bothered, laid-back Latino sensei in a face-off of American maleness. Del Toro as the good, DiCaprio as the butt, and Sean Penn as the ugly, all ricocheting off one another as pawns of the real power in a country coming apart at the seams, starting at the U.S.-Mexican border.
Now what I'm doing here is I'm creating a closed circuit. Very important to keep your cap shunted like this so you don't accidentally detonate your charge.
Don't stop.
I want you to create a show. This is an announcement of revolution.
The message is clear.
I'll be seeing you very soon.
Not if I see you first.
Viva la revolution!
We're bringing justice to the vigilante group known as the French 75. We are here to award Stephen Lockjaw with the Medal of Honor.
You have to understand, Willa.
Me and Mom used to run around and do some real bad shit. They got hurt. Now they're coming after us. Sorry.
I didn't ask for this. That's just how the cards were rolled out for me.
It's not cards. You don't roll cards. It's dice.
Dad, what is wrong with you?
Anderson has a legacy of mixing the serious, the profane, the satirical, and the devil in previous films. Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Licorice Pizza, Punch Drunk Love, Phantom Thread, which I loved, along with The Master and There Will Be Blood. One battle after another sidestepped all the festivals and went straight into a theater near you from Warner Brothers, now under attack itself. It has bewitched critics, many of whom have called it the film of the year and the one to beat. But the true fantasy of the film is not really the death grip that the crazy right has on the country 40 years after that sweet old Reagan, but in conjuring up a left-wing group of activists who fail, but who do something like actually put up a fight. Shades of the 1960s. I saw one battle in its big VistaVision format at Regal Union Square in New York City, and I'd go for as big a screen as you can find if the holiday vibe gets old and you can sneak in some loaded eggnog. Other titles to love, write these down, The Simply Fabulous Kokuho, Nouvelle Vague, and Mardi Supreme, all three meta-movies about the making of art, opera, film, and ping-pong. And Train Dreams, Sinners, Ephes, Blue Moon, Rental Family, and Surratt, which, speaking of the end of the world, takes you there and stops your heart cold. Don't miss any of those films at theaters or down by the old mill streaming. And I'm Harlan Jacobson for the WBGO Journal. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
You can see more of Harlan's best films of 2025 and worst at WBGO.org and TalkCinema.com. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. Happy holidays to you and yours. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.
I don't want to build a snowman.
The only man I need is right here.
I don't want to drag in a tree.
You see, I only want to decorate you, dear.
Only one intention that I'm going to pursue. Cause this winter, my only plan is to love you. You won't find me stuck on the highway.
cause I'm swerving off the road to your home.
Navigating big, broad storms.
So never again will you be alone.
Nothing on my schedule is under review, cause this winter my only plan is